BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Hello everyone and welcome to another BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG, and I also work clinically as a nurse consultant. So today I have great pleasure in introducing our special guest, who is Ella Guest, who is a Senior Research Fellow and Registered Health Psychologist. And today's focus will be on introducing Visible Difference Support Hub, which is introducing the evidence-based resources for people with conditions that affect their appearance. So thank you, Ella, and welcome to another BDNG podcast.
Thanks, Tina. Thank you for having me back. It's been a while since I was last talking to you.
It is. I know, time just flies, but I know how busy you've been, and you know, in sort of the PhD world as well, and also with what you do. And I, you know, our paths have crossed a few times now, so it's always a pleasure to work with you. So I know you're very busy, so I really appreciate your time today. And could you just tell us a little bit about this support hub, the Visible Difference Support Hub, and how you became involved in this?
Sure. So yeah, the Visible Difference Support Hub is a sort of online website or hub, which has lots and lots of free resources, which are all evidence-based, and they're for people with conditions that affect their appearance, what we would call visible differences, which obviously include skin conditions. There's some resources for adults, children, young people, but also some for parents and other professionals like teachers, health professionals, charitable organisations. And we at the Centre for Appearance Research have been working on a big project funded by the VTCT Foundation, I think for about 8 or 9 years now, where we've been trying to support people with visible differences and work with a group of charities known as the Appearance Collective, who support and provide information to people with a range of different conditions, and lots of those are actually skin conditions. And we've been trying to address the priorities of those charities. So a lot of the time, you probably as nurses in dermatology experience this a lot, but people might need some psychosocial support, but actually it might be very difficult to refer them to get kind of one-to-one support. And so more and more we are sort of leaning towards self-directed things like online interventions that people can kind of self-administer or do with the support of their parent, for example. So essentially we've been developing a number of different interventions that focus on addressing common issues that people with visible differences tell us that they have, and providing resources that are evidence-based. So we've carried out lots of research to develop these resources to make sure that they are relevant and useful, and we've had input from people with lived experience. Then we've evaluated them rigorously in randomized controlled trials and other studies to see that they're effective and acceptable. And now at the end of this very long period of producing them, they're finally all there on this hub, and they're available for people to use and share with their patients or anyone who might be finding them useful.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's funny world sometimes, isn't it? I've actually been writing about this today in regard to alopecia areata. So, you know, we know so many hospitals and so many primary care settings, you know, haven't got that psychological support. You know, they haven't got a psychologist, they haven't got a psych derm sort of service. It's so limited. So it's very much about signposting and very much using resources that you have. So to have this service, just I'm already excited about it. And the fact is, it does make, as a healthcare professional as well, your role and job a lot easier, because you know, at least you've got something to offer that patient in front of you. You know, you may not be that expert, but you've got something, you know, you can actually, that is valuable, and offer that patient some support, so that patient walks out feeling a lot more, you know, happy, and that something actually has been done.
So wow, that's absolutely great news. So how did this kind of come about? How many of you have kind of been working on that? I know you mentioned there about the Appearance Collective, but you know, in the background, obviously yourself, but how many others were sort of involved in this?
That's a good question. Quite a few over the years. So I think at the moment we're probably a team of maybe 8. But over the years there's been various other people. So we've always had, so the work's been led by Professor Diana Harcourt and Dr. Amy Slater. And then we've had quite a number of researchers working on it. So people like me, senior research fellows, but also we've had research associates who are kind of junior researchers and research fellows. And then we've also had a number of PhD students who have been involved in this project, developing different interventions or different tools that are online. So yeah, behind the scenes, there's been a lot of us. I guess we've also had things like statisticians supporting us, and lots of people with lived experience who have been involved in helping us make sure that the research we're doing is relevant and as useful as possible.
So lots of different resources and sources there, and you know, a big collaborative contribution, which is fantastic. It's always good to have that sort of brainstorming, and you know, people are so valuable when they come up with certain ideas as well. So very quick question before I go a bit more deep diving into this support hub. How do you access it?
That's a very good question. So it's easy to access just online. It's visibledifferencesupporthub.com. And hopefully at the conference, I'll probably also have some little business cards that you can take and maybe hand out to some of your patients as well. But yeah, visibledifferencesupporthub.com is where you go to access everything.
That's really useful, Ella. Yes, and the good news for our listeners today as well is that Ella will be speaking at our main BDNG conference on this topic as well. So that's really, really great that you've got the little card, just to make it a lot easier for us as well, just to hand them out to patients. And also, what kind of resources are on there? What would I be expected to find if I log on?
Yeah, so that's another good question. There's quite a lot on there. So we've got some resources that are quite general. So they are suitable for people with any kind of visible difference. And then we have some that are more condition specific. And there are actually a couple of resources on there that are for skin conditions specifically. So I think we've got a guide of recommendations for promoting psychological health in patients with alopecia, which was developed by various people at Centre for Appearance Research, but also Alopecia UK. And there's also some resources that I was involved with developing, which I think I've spoken about before on the podcast, with eczema outreach support. So that was funded, one of those resources by the VTCT Foundation and one by the charity itself, and that's some wellbeing resources and a care plan. But then we have these more sort of general resources that can be used across conditions. And I guess it's important to say that although obviously different visible differences and even different skin conditions will have different physical impacts, we tend to find that the psychological and social impact is quite similar. So that's why a lot of these resources kind of cut across different conditions. But we've got a number of different things. So one thing we've got is something called the Parenting Toolkit, which is an ebook for parents of children with visible differences. And this focuses on supporting parents and carers to support their own child to adjusting with a condition, kind of if they might have to manage their condition or have hospital appointments, also things like appearance concerns. But it also, as well as focusing on supporting a child, it focuses on parents' own well-being. Obviously, for you to be able to support a child to cope well, you need to be able to cope well yourself. So that ebook was developed by Dr. Maya Thornton and has been evaluated and found to be really helpful for reducing anxiety, depression, and parenting stress, and improving confidence as a parent, self-compassion, and psychological flexibility. So that's one of the interventions. We've also got various other things, including something called Expand Your Horizon, which is a functionality-based writing intervention. So this kind of focuses really on the concept of positive body image, so encouraging people to think about their body and how they look in a positive way, and actually to kind of draw their attention away from thinking just about how you look to thinking about what your body can do for you. And we know that there's evidence that thinking about body functionality can make you have a more favorable attitude towards your body more generally. So that's a writing exercise which can be completed across 5 days, and it gets you to basically think about different aspects of functionality and reflect on those and what your body can do for you. And we've again tested that with adults with visible differences, including skin conditions. And I think with that one, it's important to say as well that although that if you have a skin condition, this might impact some aspects of functionality, you might feel like you can't do everything that you want to do, it's still relevant. There's still lots of things that our bodies do for us, and sometimes we might have to adapt them, but it's kind of focusing on what the body can do instead of what it can't. We also have, which might be really useful for your patients, a podcast intervention around intimacy and romantic relationships for adults with visible differences. And this podcast format is quite unique. It's something that people can kind of engage with when they're out and about, or it can be something quite discreet, particularly as the topic is looking at intimacy. But it's got a mixture of researchers talking, and it's based on evidence, an evidence base from acceptance and commitment therapy that gets you to think about living to your personal values and helping to deal with concerns around intimacy by thinking about what's important to you and living to those values. And it's also got people with lived experience of visible difference in the episodes as well, talking about their own experiences. So that's another one. And then we also have Act It Out, which is an ACT, again, acceptance and commitment therapy based app for adults with visible differences. It's got 6 sort of 30 minute sessions on an app that you can download on your phone that help you to become more aware of habits you might be doing that might be things like concealing your visible difference or avoiding certain activities, then reducing unhelpful behaviours and focusing more on what's going on around you, recognising when you might be avoiding doing things that are important to you because you're worried, you know, about your appearance, and thinking about how you can reconnect with those and do things that are important to you. And then finally, there's a few other things, but those are just kind of some of the key highlights. But one other thing which is on there, which I've been leading and I'm currently putting onto the hub at the moment, is some resources on using social media when you have a visible difference. So guidance for adults, for young people, and also for influencers with visible differences around the kind of pressures you might feel online and how to deal with those, how to cope, and how to sort of find a balance when you're using social media.
Wow. I mean, that's some key topics there. I mean, such topics that are so important, you know, and sometimes avoided as well. That's the fact of it. You know, it's very difficult sometimes to talk about some of the topics that you've discussed there. I just love the fact that, you know, the parent one as well, you know, you're talking about the parent well-being, because that's really important. The fact that, you know, these parents, yeah, it's the child, the focus is on the child all the time, but they possibly have other children, they put, you know, they have work, they have commitments to everyday living, and, you know, if they're run down or burnt out, then it's really difficult to, you know, to support that child. So to actually encapsulate, you know, the parent as well in the well-being is just so supportive, and well done on that one. Yeah, talking about body image as well, I mean, that's so important when it comes to clinic. And the fact that, you know, we have people coming in that are a bit, you know, the sort of, we're all guilty of it. We look at social media, the perfection, and, you know, we want that body or that, you know, your face, that perfection, but it doesn't exist. It really doesn't exist. And, you know, if you look a bit closer or delve in a bit closer, that person that looks perfect is not perfect. And, you know, the amount of times as a healthcare professional, I, you know, we're talking about these specific issues when it comes to social media. So again, you know, expanding your horizon, like you mentioned, is such an important resource. Social media, like you mentioned, again, guidance on that. Gosh, we all need that when it comes to social media. And I like the fact as well that, you know, there's also, you mentioned influencers. And that's one of my questions when it comes to influencers on social media. Do you find that is becoming a bit more of an issue, or how have you gone around that? You know, because obviously some are, for example, when I'm doing the acne clinics, you know, a lot of people have been sold these amazing products that will get rid of your acne because a social influencer has said this treated my acne and look at me now, I'm so clear. But that product maybe cost an awful lot of money. So, you know, these are the issues that we're dealing with in clinics now. So how do you find the influencing, and how did you come about, you know, sort of trying to support us with that, or support people out there with that?
Yeah, I think obviously social media is this huge thing in lots of people's lives now, isn't it? And we have so many influencers who are kind of sharing their lives online, and we really feel like they're very authentic and trustworthy and relatable. They kind of seem like a friend, and in lots of cases people trust them more than they trust health professionals. Mm-hmm. As you said, and they can, you know, lots of influencers are doing really great things. They're sharing their lived experiences, they're supporting people, they're setting up communities, and they're kind of raising awareness on and challenging stereotypes. But obviously, yes, there is this side to it where people might be selling products that maybe are, yeah, very expensive, or I think often with things like in dermatology anyway, I think people kind of really want this quick fix, don't they, to something yes. that's obviously a chronic mm-hmm. problem. And sometimes that seems very attractive when you see online somebody sort of selling you this dream of, you know, just buy this one product or drink this particular thing and it will cure this problem. And, you know, so obviously we all want to believe that. And it can be, you know, it can be a place where we kind of get sucked into the rabbit hole because things seem very authentic. But yeah, obviously people can be spending a lot of money on products. Also, it can unfortunately breed sort of mistrust in health professionals, or make people worry about certain treatments that are being prescribed to them. I'm sure you know a lot about that. That seems to be a massive thing at the moment. So with this current project, we try to provide guidance on sort of critical thinking when you're online, how it can be used in a positive way, but also when you might need to step back and think about what you're seeing, and think about what people are sharing, and, you know, whether it's credible or not. And also, you know, if you're sharing things, to be really clear when you're talking about your own experience versus giving somebody sort of medical advice, for example. I think at the moment that's kind of all we can do, is sort of provide people guidance because it's not very regulated. I'm starting a fellowship actually in September, which is looking specifically at social media and AI and how they shape the kind of understandings and beliefs that people with skin conditions have about their conditions, and how that engage and how that influences how they engage with healthcare professionals, how they manage their condition. So hopefully that might kind of help more with what you're talking about. But obviously that's something that's just beginning, and it's a really, I think it's quite a massive area to start to dig into.
Absolutely. It'd be really interesting though. I mean, it'd be a fascinating project to be, you know, part of and lead on that. It's, you know, it's something that's needed, I think. And, you know, it's, social media now is always talked about. It's, you know, it's part of your consultation. It's a big part of it, you know, and many patients, you know, are coming in and they've already gone on to ChatGPT. They know the treatments. They know what to ask a dermatology person. They know not what to ask a dermatology person. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's very much AI driven, which is such a new world. And it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, isn't it? So, yeah, it's really important that that is out there, just to give us some guidance. Like you say, we're never going to get, you know, social media exists, we're never going to have all the, you know, the solutions, but definitely just to give us some guidance and support on that is fantastic. So well done. I look forward to hearing more about that, Ella, definitely.
Thanks. I'll have to come back on and tell you about that at some
you
point.
Will. It's never ending, your talents never ended. The other two sort of key aspects you mentioned there, which is sometimes a very difficult one to talk about, is the intimacy. And, you know, that can be very, very tricky, or often ignored, to be honest. You know, it's very difficult for sometimes a patient, male or female, to talk about it with their healthcare professional, or the fact is, you know, they are too embarrassed, they feel it's difficult to, you know, acknowledge the fact. And also, you know, we tend to avoid the question because we don't want to open a can of worms that we don't feel comfortable with. So I think this is great that you've got, you know, it's really unique, like you mentioned, and, you know, to have it evidence-based and have that there is really helpful. And did you mentioned, was that people that have talked openly about it in the podcasts? And how did you approach and how did you gather this evidence?
Yeah, that particular intervention, which is called Loving Action, that came about quite a few years ago from Dr. Nick Sharratt, who did a PhD trying to understand the kind of experiences and the challenges that people with visible differences face in relation to intimacy. And he did lots of qualitative research, and he interviewed lots of people to understand their experiences and sort of nuances of those things. And then he eventually kind of designed this particular intervention, and then that was taken forward in the kind of next stage of the grant by Maya Thornton and other colleagues, who did more work kind of refining it and thinking about how it would be most acceptable. And I think really having a podcast was seen as something that could be really beneficial, because it is something that's you can do like discreetly, listening with headphones, for example. But the actual principles, so it's quite a nice mixture in the podcast. There is a mixture of kind of techniques that help people to become more confident and to address worries that they might be having, and to think about whether they might be avoiding things and if that might be stopping them from doing things that they value or that are important to them. So it's got a mixture of kind of those evidence-based techniques, but then it's also got bits taken from which are people with lived experience who are voicing them, but are actors, but talking about the experiences of people who have visible differences and kind of what their experiences are, the challenges they face, but also how they've overcome them. So sort of blending those two things, I think.
And so positive, isn't it? And they'll be so helpful and help so many patients out there as well, which is fantastic. And the last one I wanted to mention was it Act It Out app, with mm-hmm. the sessions like habits, which again is really important in dermatology. I know the hub is for the sort of lots of different conditions, but you know, the fact is in dermatology we do have a lot of patients, you know, for example, not getting out that itch scratch cycle, or you know, they're pulling out their hair, or you know, there's lots and lots and lots of things out there. So is this Act It Out app, is it basically like habit, you know, is the sessions on like habit reversal, for example, or how does it work?
So I don't think there's particular things on habit reversal necessarily. It's more thinking about the psychological impact of living with a condition that affects how you look and how that might impact different aspects of your life. You know, it might affect your relationships, your, you know, at work, it might affect how you feel about yourself, your confidence, those kind of things, and trying to sort of move forwards towards things that are important to you despite the challenges that you're facing. So it doesn't specifically focus on sort of habit reversal techniques, but I suppose it is kind of relevant to that, really, because when, you know, if you have a chronic skin condition, it's obviously something that you have to come to terms with, the fact that it's something that's probably not going to go away and you need to manage it. And a lot of sometimes kind of CBT or cognitive behavioral based interventions might try and get you to think about reframing unhelpful thoughts, or thoughts, you know, things that might not be factual, when actually if you're living with something like a skin condition, you know, a lot of the worries that you're having, they might be completely legitimate, and it can be obviously then very difficult to reframe those, or it might not be very helpful. So I think with this, it's trying to kind of help people to sort of accept and adjust to having this condition and sort of live well despite the challenges that it has. So obviously that does in some ways kind of complement other more specific skin related interventions like habit reversal, or things that might focus on itch or that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it is important, you know, we have to be truthful, we have to be honest with the fact that, you know, a lot of these, it is chronic, you know, we haven't got a magic wand, unfortunately. You know, we've got very good treatments out there, but you know, at the end of the day, it is a chronic condition. You may have visible difference is there for life at times, so you know, we do have to be honest. And I think, like you say, it's sort of sort of rejigging your mind, isn't it, to think other thoughts and not all about the negativity, and, you know, to try and make the best of your world, really, like we all have to, you know. It's definitely something that is really important, definitely. So we've kind of focused on, you know, the sort of resources that are there, and, you know, the valuable input that, you know, is made this so evidence-based, and is going to be a great support reference for people out there as well. You also mentioned a couple of the sort of charities that we all are very familiar with, working with, and do a phenomenal work, for example, Alopecia UK, Eczema Outreach. Did you have a lot of the charities working with you on this?
Yeah, lots. So in the Appearance Collective, which is a sort of group of charities supporting people with visible differences, I think there's about 30 charities altogether, and obviously that covers a real range of stuff. But yeah, lots of skin condition related charities are involved and have been involved with these things. So yeah, definitely Psoriasis Association, Eczema Outreach Support, National Eczema Society, Alopecia UK. Lots and lots. I think ichthyosis support group. I think that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of different skin related charities, and HS Ireland is involved now as well. So,
fabulous. Yeah. That's really, really good news as well. So you've got a lot of good support there. So the aim really is this, what I'm thinking is that you've got this hub, and then, you know, if you've got a patient that you feel could really benefit from the resources on this, you would possibly give them the card. And is it then up to them to sort of look at the website, decide what's best for them? Or is there like a patient sort of support group or anything like that on there, or signposting to specifics? How does it work if I'm a patient?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the one thing that we wanted to make sure we did when we made the hub is that you don't have to sort of log in and provide your details to use it. So you can just go on and look at, you know, look around and think, oh, OK, this is something that might help me. We don't have a particular sort of peer support function on the website. It is more these interventions that are kind of you can access and use. But we do have links to further support. So all the different charities that we work with are all listed on there, so people can obviously reach out to them, because lots of them provide peer support and their own psychological support, really, and provide really fantastic things and sort of family days and things that we know are really important for people. So yes, going on there, you can find links to particular charities and organisations, but you can also find the resources. I think in future we may have some kind of way that you can sort of try and filter through what might be the most appropriate support for you. But at the moment, you can kind of filter by like what your concern is, or who you are as. So if you're an adult or a young person or whatever it is. And I guess these are kind of self-directed, so people can go away and do them in their own time. But actually, if you or any of your colleagues do ever have capacity, which I don't know if you would, we probably don't, but to kind of support people when they come in, you know, obviously some of these things are things that you can do, you can take from and use with patients as well, or use some of the activities if you think they might be useful for people that you're seeing as patients.
That's fabulous. And I think we'll all be looking now on the website and having a good look and a route around, definitely, just to, you know, see what's on there. I think it's such an amazing resource that you've created. And to be honest, to be having it all sort of in one sort of area as well is very useful. Was that the kind of aim for this, you know, to have so many different resources on one sort of, you know, link, so you don't have to go into different hundreds and different ones to find out what's best for you?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess one thing that I always think we come up against as researchers is we make all these things and then it's people don't know that they exist and it can be really difficult, and it kind of relies on word of mouth. So really, yeah, having the hub has been something we've wanted to do for a really long time, and it just means everything is in one place, and you know, it can be linked. If you have any websites, you know, you can add it to a link on there as well. You know, we're happy for it to be advertised like far and wide, but yeah, hopefully it means that kind of being in one place, people can go on there and look at the hub and pick from the toolbox of things that, you know, they think personally will suit them, because obviously everybody's different and there are things, you know, we different things work for different people, or people might need different things at different points in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And, you know, it's there to sort of browse and have a look. And like you say, one aspect of care isn't for everybody. So it's really important to have that. And also, you know, sometimes if you say to patients or people with visible difference, you know, we've got this, we've got that support network, and they go, no, it's something I don't want to be involved in. But, you know, if you've got something that they can actually look and have a look and sort of, you know, find out what's best for them, then it's a really valuable. Yeah, and I think, you know, through the BDNG, we'll definitely be doing some more promoting on this as well, because it's so valuable. And like you say, it's word of mouth sometimes, isn't it? And, you know, getting the sort of education piece out there, the fact is this is actually available, you know, especially when you've done all the hard work, Ella, behind this.
Yeah, definitely. We need to spread the word and hope people can actually benefit from using it.
Yeah, they will benefit. And believe me, I mean, I've learned so much on this podcast today as well. And the fact is that, you know, I'll definitely be having a look, and I'll definitely be bending your ear to do some more work with you as well. Ella, before we wrap up this podcast, you've talked an awful lot. We're so grateful for that, about, you know, introducing us to this Visible Difference Support Hub. Is there any other words or key aspects you'd like to just to sort of highlight to our listeners today before we close?
I don't think so. I feel like I've really talked about lots of things. I suppose just that, yeah, the resources are there, and you know, we want them to benefit as many people as possible. So feel free to use them, or, you know, tell people about them. And yeah, and I think this is, particularly with social media, as something that I'm going to continue to look at. I think it's a really important area. So if people are ever interested in being involved with that, or collaborating in terms of dermatology and social media, then I'm always interested to hear people's thoughts.
That's fantastic. I'm sure you will get some willing volunteers there. Definitely. Definitely. So I'd like to say a massive thank you, Ella, as always. What you do is phenomenal. And obviously, I know behind the scenes what you achieve as well, or a little bit of what you achieve, because obviously you've got a huge amount of work that you've done. It's just made such a big difference, and you should be so proud of what you've achieved, definitely. The great news, as I say, Ella will be speaking for us at main conference, so please join us to have just a fantastic presentation from Ella as well. And it definitely won't be the last we'll be hearing from you, Ella, as I know you've got lots and lots of other interesting aspects of care to share with us as well. So thank you for spending your time with us today. Very much appreciated. And good luck with your social media.
Thank you. And look forward to seeing you in person in October.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.